Now, during the strike, you were chairing the Community Services Committee.
Yes.
And basically then in the position of making decisions about who was going to get what. And we talked about some of the problems you
had
in that, and you're being shot at, and
needing
the guard, etc. Did you, in that role, also make contact with the community agency?
Stores? Oh, yes. Very definitely. A very sad contact I had was with the Red Cross. That was one of the first contacts, because we had, the first, second day of our strike, we had people whose homes were being foreclosed because they were in sad straits prior to that, And then we had women who were having babies and all that sort of thing, and so I contacted the Red Cross, and I asked if they could help us with diapers or bottles or, whatever, anything. We would appreciate help. And they told me they were very sorry that if we were on strike, they couldn't help us. And I thought, I was real upset about that. In fact, my little daughter made the first pot of coffee for when we were on strike. Mm-hmm. She made the first pot of coffee, and I bought us urns, that kind of stuff. So I ordered coffee from Farmer Brothers. And when it didn't show up, I called back there, and I said, well, why haven't you delivered? Well, you're on strike. And they were non-union. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't deliver. Then I contacted Salvation Army, and they were great. They helped us with baby clothes and bottles and things like that, and they were just great. They were just really great, And they even helped us when there were some single men, who needed a place to stay, and they helped us with that. They were absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then we set up charge accounts, because we established our own, how much each person should get and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And the international was supposed to deposit $500,000 at a time in the bank for us, and so we set up accounts at Sears and Roebuck so that it was, September time for kids to go to school, mm-hmm. so that people that qualified would come up to the hall and get a little chip to go there and buy a pair of shoes for each kid in the family. Yeah. And if a man or woman was walking pick-a-duty, they were entitled to a pair of shoes too. And they were just great that way. The Sears and Roebuck was just great. And the banks now, we had a committee set up that would contact the banks for those people who were late making a payment on their house, mm-hmm. And if they were way, way, way behind, we would try to determine if we could pay, say, a half month's payment. And most of the banks would accept that. We had a very good relationship. And with the department stores, the May Company, Buffum's department store, But anyhow, so we had very good cooperation from most of the people, most of the big agencies there in Long Beach, excepting, unfortunately, the Red Cross. I felt very badly about that.
Now, what about church groups?
Yes, we had good help from church groups, very good help from church groups. The Catholic Church was just really great, and the other churches were also. We had very, very good support from them. We even set up, we had some loan organizations that come in there, and they would make loans to some of our people, agree to hold off, till we were back to work for 2 or 3 months. We had a big organization. It took a lot of organizing, but it worked out very well. And, of course, we had to weed out those that were needy, too. Because back then, we didn't have a strike fund. We did not have a strike fund on the basis of need, So it was kind of tough.
Yeah.
But
it seemed, one of the things that surprised me in looking through your bookings was, it seemed that the IPT was supportive of the strike.
Well, I know it seems that way in comparison to the way it's been the last couple of years, right? I think you see, after all, we were at that time too, I believe, probably the largest, Douglas Aircraft was the largest employer in the area, and so they were feeling a pinch pretty bad, and our demands were not unreasonable.
Well, that's what surprised me.
You see,
that the newspaper, except for the retroactive pay, they seem to be supportive of the demands and trying to put pressure on Douglas to settle.
Our demands were not unreasonable. They were not unreasonable. Mm-hmm. They really weren't. Of course, we were always going out for things that we could look for in the future. So you've always got those, the little packs of negotiations, Always you've got to have a goal that someday you'll have this determine what you can trade for those things. But the press program was very supportive.
How about, what was your feeling, given the fact that you did get that kind of support from the community agencies, except for the Red Cross, and the IPT being certainly not anti the strike, and they seemed to be hitting some ground that certainly gave you legitimacy. What was your feeling about the general reaction and feelings in the community? How
very supportive. Mm-hmm. Very supportive. You know that we did too. We'd have teams go out and solicit from the small little stores and little for clothes and food, you know, mm-hmm. and whatever for money for our soup kitchen, whatever, you know. And they were very, very supportive. Really, they were very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays people are. You don't find that good support like we used to have. And I don't know whether they feel like, for instance, like this PATCO strike, you know, the issue of backing themselves in a corner, both the government and the union. That's a sad situation.
Mm-hmm.
It upset me terribly. That set the whole organized labor back 100 years right there. And it's just very, very sad. Anyway, and then, of course, some of the people that are not hurting as bad as they used to, not, you know, after enjoying the fruits of organized labor all these years and everything, they're taking so many things for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're a little inconvenienced now, the public, then they get angry. They're like, hey, you know, we've come a long ways. But then again, unions, too, have to realize their responsibilities and don't become so demanding unreasonably that it creates this problem, you see?
So your feeling is that in that time period, generally, there was just more support for labor because people were just coming out of hard times, for one thing.
Very definitely.
And recognized the need, recognized the need of unions and the demands.
Very definitely. And the demands were not unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And when the people that went on strike then were, they were hurting badly. A lot of people go on strike now, they'll say, oh, well, so, I know not long ago when I was going through the check line down here at Vaughn's, you know, and the retail clerks were supposed to go out, you know, on strike, I said, well, good luck on your contract, I hope you don't hit the bricks. Oh, well, I want a couple months off. Young kids, they don't realize, you know, what you've, oh, my, they have enough money, and, you know, and you know, saving everything else, so what, they want a vacation anyhow. You know, the idea that you're going to fight for somebody to make working conditions better for you know, yourself and people in the future, doesn't even seem to cross their minds anymore. It's too bad.
Now, if you had your druthers during that period of the strike, which committee or what role would you have most liked to have played in the strike? Once it started, you were on the bargaining committee, but in terms of the activity and responsibilities during the strike itself?
I would like to have been chairman of that committee. Bargaining committee, not president of the local union, chairman of that bargaining committee. I would have been able to, I think, bring about the things so that it wouldn't have been so lengthy.
Mm.
I think the chairman could have played a little stronger role in that.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to have had a crack at that.
Did you make your feelings
felt
at all?
Oh, yes.
Tell me a little bit about how that was reacted to.
Well, our chairman, he was a real sharp guy, a real nice guy. However, he would let things kind of roll off his shoulders. He didn't take them quite as serious as I did, because after all, he'd been in the business a lot longer than I had, you know. And he'd say, oh, Betty, relax, everything's going to be all right. No, it isn't. Now, my gosh, you know, come on, let's get this together here, Alex. Now, Betty, relax. Now, let me tell you something. And he'd tell me something many years back. Of course, you know, he was right. However, after all, we had a lot of people that brought in the bricks, and, you know, and they were hurting badly. And I was closer to those people than he was. I saw a lot of that. You know what I mean? I'd sit there, and I'd be there all hours of the night and day, you know, talking to these people and stuff like that. And darn it, I was impatient. Oh, yeah, they thought I was just too...
Now, how was the chair of the bargaining committee selected? By the executive board?
Your bargaining committee is elected by the membership, and then the chairmanship is elected by the members of the bargaining committee.
Ah.
See, it's politics, caucus, pre-caucus, and caucus, you know, see? That's the way it's done.
But how did you feel about being, I guess you would have the chair of the community services committee, though,
right?
How did you feel about being assigned that role?
Well, I'd had it before. I mean, I've been working as community services for a long time before the strike, you know. And so it was, the only thing is, the duties during the strike were great deal different. I mean, our additional duties. But prior to that, it was like calling on people who were ill, going to the hospital, you know, and working with the USO group and things like that, and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So nowadays, it seems that we would react to that being something that they would assume a woman should do. It was the caretaking and nurturing and nursing.
Well, there had been men doing that, too, though. But the thing is, you see, the community service is true. At that time, you know, a lot of it should be done on your own time, no lost time. And so a lot of the people didn't want to allot their time for that sort of thing. And to me, it was pretty important. And I felt that I took the time to do it really and truly. Very important.
Now, aside from that community during the strike itself, were there, you talked about women very often being picket captains.
Oh, yes.
Were there women who were in the strike, had responsibilities in the strike headquarters, for instance, besides yourself?
Let me see. Not at that level. We had women, like this one girl I told you about, Lottie Mae Bickerstaff, she took over the soup kitchen. And boy, that was a big responsibility, you know, buying all the food and it was, you know, taking the food that was solicited and utilizing it and keeping the people on schedule and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. But again, something that is just women should do.
I suppose. Yeah, it was the same thing like this last strike, you know, when I volunteered, you know, and even though I was on sick leave, they said, and they'd been on strike, the officer said, can I help you in any way, you know? And it's the biggest problem we have right now. We can't get the food out of the picket lines. We can't get the organizing and that kind of stuff. So, heck yeah, I'll help. Any way I can help, you know.
That was true. We went, some of us in my union went down the first week of the PACO strike to do some support picketing. We went down there. And all the men are sitting around bullshitting, and the women are all making the sandwiches.
That usually happens. Once in a while, you'll find some guy that's really great, and they'll come home. He'll help, you know. But it does. I know, yeah, PACO's been using our hall up there, you know.
Yeah.
It's great. And a lot of our people went up and did some support picketing, too, up in L.A. I don't know if you saw him up there, but they were up there. I was gone. Yeah, I felt so terrible. Oh, my God. When I packed, was in bed 4 days back there in Florida when I got there. I thought, oh, my God, how am I going to get home, you know? And I thought, oh, Lord, you know, it is fly. And I thought, oh, my God, it's strike. So I told my brother, I said, well, honey, I'll tell you something. I know, because if I went back by Amtrak, I'd have a rough time trying to get back here, too. And so either that or stay there until I could, and the girls couldn't stay there. You know, anyhow, it was a real hairy decision. I said, well, I'll tell you what. Let's go down to the airport. If there's a picket line, I'm going to be visiting you for a couple of months, honey. I just have to wait because I just can't handle it. I can't cross the picket line. I will not cross the picket line. I said, but if there's a picket line there, I just will not go. He said, okay, Betty. He said, don't worry about it. He said, we'd love to have you well, anyhow. That made me feel good, but thank God there was not a picket line there. But, you know, it bothered me just terribly. It really did. And then I thought, oh, my Lord, am I getting L.A.? This is a real, I've never crossed a picket line in my life. I don't care if it's an informational picket line. What? I never, never, never. And, you know, that really, and it still bothers me right now. But I think I understand a little bit now when people say I had a physical disability or I have this or that. I might be looking at it a little bit differently now because it did happen to me.
Because when people have crossed picket lines.
That's right.
Well, that brings up a question in my mind in terms of that 51 strike. At that point, it seemed like you had, in terms of membership, you had something like 80% of the shop were actually members.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We had a good percent. Really good.
How much among the members? Were there any scabs?
Would you believe, this number seems sticking in my mind, there were only 31 people that crossed that picket line unauthorized. 31 only during the whole strike. Now, you know, we gave passes, you know. We wanted some overhead in there, so we gave passes to the telephone operators, but none of them crossed without a pass. They got a legitimate pass. And boy, they'd go by and they'd probably show their pass. And the electricians, you know, of course, and a lot of those. You see, back in those days, the unions were sticking together a lot closer back then than they are now, even. They don't take the chances now because of the court cases and everything else. But back then, they'd even if they were still did have a contract with a company, you know, a lot of them might stay out and not cross that because of the picket line. See? Oh, yes, they were really a lot stronger. And, you know, really, because we're all tough, all struggling to get the decent living for all of our people. Living wages. Anyway, so what we did... And, you know, they're good union people, boy, they are good. So we'd give them a pass and say, authorized across the picket line, and they would, you know, and even the nurses and everything, we'd give them all, and the welders, we wanted the welders in there too, you know, because that's all overhead, mm-hmm. and that would help us, you know, and the company cost them a lot of money, it'd be better to bring us back, well, that would help break this crack up, mm-hmm. and bring us back, see?
Now, what but 31
people,
that's
all. Well, for instance, if you go in one department where they're welding, at that time, like welding, they had a setup for the cowling for the aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
All right? You can't, the welders wouldn't have anything to do because if the assemblers weren't there to set them up in the jigs, you know, and drill and tack mm-hmm. weld them, tack them to get into the welders would just be sitting there.
I see. So you're putting pressure on by having
pressure,
some people
absolutely,
go in.
Absolutely.
But who basically were being paid for not working.
That's correct.
I see.
Absolutely.
And these were basically people who were not assemblers, and who would they be?
Belonged to other unions.
Okay.
No, we didn't issue passes to any of our members.
No.
Oh, no. Only to other persons, the members belong to other unions only.
I see.
Because some of them, you know, boy, they wouldn't cross that picket line. We said, no, this is better to have them go in.
Yeah.
And besides that, you know, we could keep tabs on everything, how it was going on the shop, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the strike, it seems that was almost the first opportunity for a larger number of women to have their presence felt as union leaders,
Definitely.
Was that a period where some other women started to come forward?
Oh, definitely. After that, we had women run for shop stewards, you know, more coming up to the ranks. Very definitely, because the women did a fantastic job. I remember one little old gal, I saw her a couple of months ago at the retirees meeting. She, honest to God, she couldn't weigh 100 pounds. And she was the lieutenant, picket lieutenant. And I'm telling you, boy, she had Lakewood Boulevard there right at the center tunnel. And she had men, great big men, you know, the boulevard. Boy, she kept things right down there just sharp as a tack. And her people always showed up. They just loved her. And after that, her name was Hoppy Farmer. She's a little darling. And her name is Hoppy Farmer. And after that, she ran for shop steward. And, boy, she sure was elected.
Mm.
See, a lot of gals had a chance to prove themselves out there in the picket line. They really did.
So they became known and accepted.
Accepted. Known. So that they could be organizers and they could go out there and fight for everybody, not just because they were a woman or whatever. It didn't matter, you know.
Now, how did someone like her who had not previously been a steward get in the position of lieutenant?
Just by going out there and saying, okay, they got a bunch of people here, now we have a list of names, okay, now... Here's 20 people over here. Now, we want to take so get gate so-and-so. Now, who volunteer? Who did this or that? You know, stuck your hand up. You're the one. Okay? And if it worked out, fine. If it didn't work out, we just appoint somebody else.
So, in effect, it gave the women a chance to put themselves in the position
absolutely.
Of working. And since everyone was needed.
That's correct.
They would then be selected.
They assumed the responsibility. So, a lot of, you know, some people can be mere leaders and followers, like they say, okay? And some people are just not comfortable with any kind of responsibility at all. They just like to go and punch time cards and go out there and do their little job in the shop, and that's it, period. They just don't want to assume any responsibility. But a lot of the gals, you know, they showed a lot of leadership, and they're willing to help, and they're in there fighting, you know, for this is hard as a man, a lot of them harder, much harder.
It's interesting because it sounds like in many ways it represented a breakthrough.
Very definitely a breakthrough. Now, there were some women active prior to that, but not very many.
Mm-hmm.
It was only those women that the politicians could really woo into, and they were actually exploiting them, really, because mm-hmm. they're female, if they could pick up a female vote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They had to be talked into doing it. And they weren't always the most qualified.
Mm. Now, my one last question about the strike in relation to the issue of women, too, was you mentioned... the lesbian goon squad.
Oh, yes.
Now, was it just these two women?
There were just
women?
Two. There were only two lesbians, uh-huh. Yes. And they were fantastic, black
now,
and brown.
Where did the idea come from?
Well, because they came to me one time and said, well, Betty, what can we do, you know? And I told them, I said, well, of course, you've got the picket line and everything else. And I said, boy, you know, we've got a problem. There's some women that are, you know, they're wanting to cross that picket line, and I hate to send the guys, the goons, out there because it's kind of strong-arm stuff, you know, see? So they said, well, they'll call on. That's how it started. I said, great. And so these guys would go out. And they would talk to them. They're women, you know, and they'd go out there and talk to them in their work clothes and everything else. They'd go knock on the door and talk to them because they're women. They couldn't say we were putting a song on them,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And They were very good. They were sharp, very intelligent girls.
Now, did they appear physically tough?
Yes, they were large women. They were bone structure large. Mm-hmm. They were not small and petite, mm-hmm. you know. But they weren't tough, no. Mm. No. It was a well-groomed lady, mm-hmm. well-groomed. And although they didn't appear effeminate or anything like that, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Were they viewed as lesbians by everybody?
Not for a long time. Not for a long time. Mm-hmm. I was aware of it, yes. Mm.
So were there negative feelings about them?
You mean about them as female goon squad or what?
About their being lesbians?
Not until it created a problem in the shop that I had the company called me in on, because apparently they were having personal problems, you know, and the one would go calling on the other one right in the shop and couldn't be away from it, and it caused a lot of problems, and it was just a very touchy situation. I hated it, because, they done such a good job in the shop, and I liked them personally and everything else, but it got to be the point where the company was going to fire them. Because there were so many complaints, and not from management, but from the people. Because the one couldn't keep their hands off the other one, and they were just crying, standing there crying, because I guess the one was going to leave the other one, you know, in a sad situation.
But during the strike, it didn't seem to be anything like
that. Oh, no. Definitely. In fact, it would be commended for the help they were giving us, because it was something that a lot of women would be afraid to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because supposing that the husband came to the door and told me to get lost or whatever, you know. And you have to handle it nicely. And these gals were, like I say, they were large bone gals. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you look at them, you know, you couldn't just push them around.
Now, are there other things about the strike that we haven't covered? Do you think we've covered a fair amount?
I think so.
Questions, because it really occurred to me that it was the opportunity for women to start.
It really come up. Really, not for those that wanted to, you know, and and allowed them to, that to the women, to prove to the women themselves they could do it.
Yeah.
You know, they could.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, if you prior to that, of course, there were some women, but it was strictly because of politics and the plan for the job.
Now, after the strike, what was your role in the union? You were still
on the bargaining
committee, and you were still in this lead position and getting yourself covered.
As lead man of shop.
Still the same arrangement.
Oh yes, still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Still the same. After strike, still the same. And I remember then just what office I decided to run for after that. Because I really enjoyed the bargaining committee. I really did. I think I can't remember just exactly the sequence now. I think that the last job that I ran for and held, for political reasons, they wanted to run for recording secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I did, and I served as recording secretary, but I didn't, and I was trustee, and I was different other things.
Now, why was it that you became trustee? Was that after the strike?
No, that was when I went to Europe.
Oh, so it was after the strike, it's about 15
years
before then.
Uh-huh.
Now, does that mean that you stepped down from the bargaining committee?
No. Would you believe it's supposed to be a step up? The executive board. But I never felt that way. Because your executive board is your top office in the local union. Yeah. But there isn't that much action, and I never really cared for it. Even the recording secretary, you have a lot of work to do and all that, but it's not as interesting. It's not the challenge. It's just strictly take care of the business of the local union, and it doesn't have anything to do with the contract and processing grievances, things like that, negotiations. Nothing.
So it has less to do with the shop activity.
Absolutely.
So
oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. But it's supposed to be a step up.
Now, when you ran for trustee, then that meant that you went off the bargaining committee in order to run for trustee.
Yes.
Now, what technically was the role of trustee in the executive
board? Well, a trustee is supposed to oversee all the finances and expenditures of the local union, responsibility for all of the equipment and the properties and all that sort of thing, and for any expenditures made. At the time that I was trustee, before any checks were made out or any money spent, a voucher would have to be made out, and it would take two out of three signatures of trustees before they could issue a check.
Mm-hmm.
Well, things have changed a heck of a lot now from there. We don't do that anymore. So we have a lot of responsibility that way.
So it was basically financial monitoring.
Oh, yes.
In effect.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But and had no, at that point, once it became Christy, you had no shock response.
Oh, no. I was still chief steward out in that area.
Mm-hmm.
I was chief steward still.
Now, what made you decide to run for trustee?
Because I was learning about politics, and I realized that's where they need the votes, and I realized that that's where they needed my help to put a ticket.
That by being an executive.
That's right.
But you were able to keep your hand in shopping.
Yes, I was, and I think that's one of the reasons why I accepted the job, because I knew I could still be
mm-hmm.
in the shop. But it's just a political expediency thing, and I just wasn't very happy with it. But I